Good morning, and welcome to the First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton, a welcoming Unitarian Universalist congregation. My name is Lee Cooprider, and I serve as the treasurer. Child care is available in the lower level of Fellowship Hall. If you don't know how to get there, ask an usher. Everyone's invited to coffee hour, also in Fellowship Hall. If you don't know how to get there, follow the crowd. And if this is your first time with us, please sign the guest book either in the vestry or at coffee hour so we can put you on our mailing list and get you all kinds of wonderful information.
Good morning. My name is Eileen Gillespie, and I serve as your intern minister here at First Parish of Stowe and Acton. I have one more announcement for you this morning. Some of you may have read my email to FPC announced this week, but it is my joy to share that I will be teaching a four-part course on the Sikh religion starting Thursday, February 25th. We'll meet Thursday the 25th, Thursday March 3rd, Thursday March 17th, and Friday March 11th we will be taking a trip to visit a Sikh temple in Everett, Massachusetts. So this is a wonderful opportunity to learn more about the religions of the world. For example, who here knew that Sikhism is the world's fifth largest religion? I see the senior youth who I taught about Sikhism are raising their hands. Well, you too are invited to my course if you'd like to learn more about Sikhism. Or if, as I put in my announcement, if you're wondering why my hair is so long, that would be a great way to learn more about Sikhs, including myself. So you are welcome. Please RSVP to me via email, in person, or stick a note in my box. Thank you so much. I invite you now to join with me in our call to worship, which will be a responsive litany. So that means after each line that I read, I will invite you all to respond with the words printed in your order of service. We are all stewards of FPC. When we come together in this community of faith, transcending our differences and embracing instead our common love, we are all stewards of FPC. When we listen to one another's struggles and work to uplift one another,
we are all stewards of FPC.
When we teach religious education classes, volunteer at fairs and potlucks and auctions, fix leaking roofs and shovel snow in the parking lot,
we are all stewards of FPC.
When we brainstorm how best to live out our values of justice, acceptance, and diversity,
we are all stewards of FPC.
When we serve on committees that work to further the mission of this church,
we are all stewards of FPC.
When together we bless the births of new children and commemorate the deaths of those people young and old who have left our community,
we are all stewards of FPC.
When we care for one another, when we sing together, when we pray together, and when we gather together in this hall of worship,
we are all stewards of FPC.
When we give freely of our time, of our talents, and of our treasures, whatever they may be,
we are all stewards of FPC.
Blessed be. I invite forward Russ Hart to light our flame, the chalice, the symbol of Unitarian Universalism, as we read together the words printed in your order of service for the lighting of the chalice. We light our chalice for the spirit of generosity and all that it makes possible. May we cultivate that spirit in our lives and live every day knowing that it is truly in giving that we receive.
Ah! Please be seated and attentive to a little play we have for you, I guess we call it.
Good morning. So I have a story that I adapted called Wilford Gordon MacDonald Partridge, and it is one of my favorite children's stories ever, and it's adapted by the author Mem Fox. There once was a small boy called Wilford Gordon MacDonald Partridge, and what's more, he wasn't very old either. His house was next door to an old people's home, and he knew all of the people who lived there. He liked Mr. Jordan, who played the organ. He listened to Mr. Hosking, who told him scary stories. He played with Mr. Tippett, who was crazy about cricket. He ran errands for Miss Mitchell, who walked with a wooden stick. And he admired Mr. Drysdale, who had a voice like a giant. But his favorite person of all was Miss Nancy Allison Delacourt Cooper, because she had four names just as he did. He called her Miss Nancy and told her all of his secrets. One day, Wilford Gordon heard his mother and father talking about Miss Nancy.
Poor old thing.
Why is she a poor old thing?
Because she's lost her memory.
It isn't surprising. After all, she is 96.
What's a memory?
Well, it's something you remember.
But Wilford Gordon wanted to know more, so he called on Mrs. Jordan and asked her,
"What's a memory?"
Mr. Jordan, excuse me.
It's something warm, my child. Something warm.
Then he went to see Mr. Hosking and asked him,
"What's a memory?"
Something from long, long ago, my lad. Something from long, long ago.
Then he called on Mr. Tippett and asked him,
"What's a memory?"
It's something that makes you cry, my boy. Something that makes you cry.
He saw Miss Mitchell and he asked her,
"What's a memory?"
Something that makes you laugh. Something that makes you laugh.
He then called on Mr. Drysdale and asked him what a memory was.
Something as precious as gold, young man. Something as precious as gold.
So then Wilford Gordon went home to look for his gift of memories for Miss Nancy because she had lost her own. He looked for the shoebox of shells he had found at the beach last summer and put in his favorite shell gently into a basket. He found the puppet, which always made everyone laugh, and put that in the basket, too. He remembered with sadness the medal which his grandfather had given him, and he placed that gently next to the shell. Next, he found a soccer ball, which was as precious as gold to him. And last of all, on his way to see Miss Nancy, he went into the hen house and took a fresh, warm egg from under a hen. Then Wilford went to see Miss Nancy, and he started giving her things one by one. And Miss Nancy said,
"What a dear, strange child to bring me all these wonderful gifts."
And Wilfred handed her the warm egg.
"I once found some tiny speckled blue eggs in a bird's nest in my aunt's garden. They were warm and delicate."
And he handed her the shell.
"I remember once I went to the beach by tram a long time ago, and oh, I was so hot because I had on my button-up boots. But then I took them off and I danced in the sand."
And then he showed her the medal.
"I had a big brother who went off to the war and he never came home. I loved him so much. Some days I still miss him."
Then he handed her the puppet.
"Oh, I once showed a puppet like this to my sister while she was eating breakfast, and she started to laugh with her mouth full of porridge. It was so funny."
And Wilfred handed the soccer ball to her.
"I remember the day I met you and all the secrets that we have shared."
And then Wilfred Gordon and Miss Nancy smiled and smiled because Wilfred Gordon had given her the most precious gift. Her memory had been found again by a small boy who wasn't very old either.
I invite you now into a time of silent prayer and meditation with these words from Mary Oliver in a poem entitled Praying. It doesn't have to be the blue iris. It could be weeds in a vacant lot or a few small stones. Just pay attention. Then patch a few words together and don't try to make them elaborate. This isn't a contest, but a doorway into thanks and into a silence in which another voice may speak. At a small service a couple of months ago, I told a little story, and someone asked me if I would please use this at the offertory on Stewardship Sunday. So here it is. Some of you may have heard it before, I know. There was a young girl who was going to walk to church, and her mother gave her 2 quarters. One so that she could buy herself an ice cream cone on the way home from church, and the other for her to put into the collection plate, into the offering. So off she went to church, and she tripped and fell, dropped the quarters, and one of them rolled down into the sewer. So she sat on the sidewalk crying, and a man came along and said, "Are you hurt?" And she said, "No, not really," she said. And he said, "Well, what's wrong?" She said, "Well, I dropped the church's quarter down the sewer." You get the point. On Stewardship Sunday, it is about priorities, isn't it? It really is. No one here is asking you to forgo things that you enjoy in your life. But the truth is that true generosity to your church does require making some little sacrifices in order to be truly generous. And as you know, the generosity goes not only within this community, but beyond. Next week, you'll hear Ken Wagner will be here to speak to you about Drum and ARE, which are both racial justice, black allies with the black community organizations, which are so important right now. And this month's offering is split with them. The morning offering will now be gratefully accepted. That doesn't inspire you to give, I don't know what will. I'd like to now welcome our co-chairs of our stewardship committee. You know, stewardship committee is something that's often behind the scenes here, but it's absolutely critical to our programs. Without them, we wouldn't be able to have those programs. So Bob Selling and Rochelle Riceberg have a shared message for you.
Good morning. I've been a member of the Stewardship Committee for many years. In fact, I was a member when it was called the Canvas Committee. And I was very happy when they changed the name, because canvassing didn't seem to, it sounded like something they used to do in the 19th century when they had voting. But at any rate, what I liked about it is that stewardship has a definition. And stewardship means, is defined as the management of and care of something. And for us, our something is First Parish. And our part of the job is to raise the money necessary to pay the costs of the church. We have a big footprint here at First Parish. We have over 300 members. In addition to many friends and visitors, we own several buildings with contents, furnishings, and systems. This takes a lot of money. We have to get enough money to pay our valued employees, to buy the maintenance services of artisans, plumbers, electricians, and other essential workers, pay for our utilities, and retire our debts. All of this takes a great deal of money. Although the church has some income from other sources, the fair, things like that, two-thirds of the budget, in fact, more than two-thirds of the budget, comes from pledge income. Early each year in January, we start our stewardship campaign. It's usually announced in a letter to everyone, friends, and members. And it includes a pledge form and an envelope. It's a broad hint. The online pledge section of the website is activated and announced that it is open for business. We also begin to remind everyone regularly in all of our church communications that we are accepting pledges for the next fiscal year. We realize when we do this that we are going to gather a great deal of private information. We are very aware of this. We keep this in mind at all times, and it is always treated confidentially. During the months following this, we do follow-up reminders by phone and email to members and friends. We especially want to be sure that recent members and friends understand our financial program and how it works. If you get a call from us, from someone calling from stewardship, please answer. It's very frustrating to find that we cannot contact people because they think they know what we want and they don't answer the phone. Or they don't answer the email. You know, we're working at this. Just answer us. We'd love to talk to you. There's a frequent question is why we do this pledge campaign so early in the calendar year when we're asking for pledges which won't be paid until starting July 1st. That's the next fiscal year. Well, the answer is very simple. It's the budget. The Finance Committee needs to prepare a budget for the next fiscal year. They must know how much will be available in pledge income when they present the budget for a vote at the annual meeting in May. And by the way, be sure to go to the annual meeting. It's very enlightening, and it's fun besides. And they usually have a little refreshments at it. So go to the annual meeting, and also go to the information meetings that the Finance Committee puts together in advance of it so that you can understand exactly what is going to happen and what the needs are. Voting is a privilege for UU members that is not available in almost all other denominations. This is a rare privilege. Exercise it, please. And finally, if you have any questions about this at all, we always have, during coffee hour, there is always a stewardship table. You can go to that table and get all the information you need. And today, I'll be available at the table. Have a great time.
All right. Thanks, Bob. So Bob has given you the mechanics of our stewardship campaign. Now I'd like to briefly give you the aspirations of our campaign. And I do know that brief is important to you youth. So our committee consists of Nancy Friedrichs, Rick Gentleman, Helen Jones, Betty Selling, Elizabeth Stollard, and Ann Walker. After talking to the leadership of the church, our stewardship committee begins their work, and we prepare letters, brochures, articles to describe the campaign aspirations. This year, we would like to highlight four areas that we aspire to raise additional funds for. The first is to provide much-deserved merit raises for our staff. As employees of the church, they are the unsung heroes that make everything around us work. This year, we would like to include merit increases in our budget. The second area is to increase funding to support our youth group. This is an incredible program that many churches aspire to. In essence, an increase funding for it is really an investment in our children and our future. The third area is to address our deferred maintenance. We have a beautiful facility, but there are projects needed to maintain it. And finally, the fourth area is to fund our UUA fair share. This is something that had to be reduced last year to balance the budget, but with additional pledge funding, we could pay our fair share. Our committee wants to thank all of you for your very generous contributions and for the spirit in which you go about it. I know many people do not feel comfortable asking for money from others, but our committee has felt that it has been incredibly rewarding to do so in this church. We are especially thankful that Tom creates sermons on Generosity Sunday that are a celebration of what our church is, and we hope that our aspirational goals will be something you'll consider when you pledge this year. Thank you again for your generosity.
Thank you both for all your work on behalf of stewardship. I had an older cousin named Raymond, and he was a kind of an unusual kid. Growing up, I would sometimes play with him. And if I ever said that I liked one of his toys, he would just give it to me. It wasn't just me. If anyone needed or wanted something he had, he was happy to give it to them. Sometimes other parents would have to come over to his family's house in the evening to return things to his parents that Raymond had given to their children. When he came home from school one cold day without his jacket, his mother began to become concerned. People would say he was generous to a fault, or that you should not give anything to him because he would just give it away. I'm afraid I was more of the type that valued and protected my things. I remember wondering why Raymond gave so many things away. I think I talked with my mom about it, and she said something like, "He's just a very generous person. That's who he is." I asked her, "Doesn't it make him sad to give away his favorite toys?" And she said, "No, it makes him happy." And then I asked that same question that I always asked when I was a kid, "Why?" And she said, "Giving things to people who want or need them makes him feel good inside." And then I said, "But Raymond always is the one giving things. He never gets anything." And she said something like, "Not really. You know, we all like to get presents, But when we give someone else a present, especially someone who really needs something, we get back something inside. Though I didn't know it at the time, I think that was my first exposure to the ideas of Francis of Assisi, that it is in giving that we receive. Raymond is gone now, and truth is, he never accumulated much in his life. I now know that his giving things to people was the way that he expressed that he cared for them, was concerned about them, wanted them to be happy, even that he loved them. Giving expressed who he really was inside. My colleague Scott Alexander wrote a book about giving a while back, and in it he says, "I give generously to my church because it tells the truth about who I am. If I did not, it would say that I was a person who had nothing to give, or I was a person who received nothing from life, or I was a person who did not matter to the larger society, or I was a person whose life meaning was solely in providing for my own needs. But in fact, who I am is the opposite of all these things. I am a person who has something to give. I am a person who has received abundantly from life. I am a person whose presence matters in the world. I am a person whose life has meaning because I am connected to and care about many things larger than myself alone. If I did not give generously, I would lose track of these truths about who I am. By giving generously, I remember who I am." You know, sometimes I actually think we do forget who we are. We forget that we are people who have received much and have much to give. We become so preoccupied with meeting our needs, providing for ourselves and our families, that we forget how much more to life there is. We can become so engaged with accumulating and holding on to what we have, that we can just lose track of the bigger things that we do care about. Yes, we all need to look out for ourselves to prepare for our future, but the love inside all of us calls us to do more with what we have than only take care of ourselves and maybe our immediate family. As most of you know, I go to San Miguel Allende, Mexico, fairly often. When I'm there, I do a lot of walking. And I walk on down one street in particular, and I regularly see one old woman who has very deformed limbs sitting on the sidewalk with her head bowed, with a scarf covering it, and her little deformed hand extended. Now, at first, this scene and others like it made me feel really uncomfortable. But now I've come to feel that she is a gift to remind me again who I am, a person who has something to give, a person who, unlike her, has received abundantly from life, a person who does care about things larger than myself. She helps me to grow a more generous heart. And when I hand her a few coins, I have not solved her problems or the failures of the system that caused her to be in this position. But what I have done matters, at least a little. And when she receives the coins, she says a blessing to me. And I feel something grow in my heart, a connection to her and to those like her. It's a small interaction, but for me, this moment in the street of Mexico is, in fact, a spiritual moment, a moment in which I feel the generosity in my heart growing. I'm reminded of these words from another colleague, Marilyn Sewell. When we give, we feel the depth of our powers to create, to heal, to love. These are spiritual powers which, when exercised, enlarge our souls. When we give, And when our gift is received, both the giver and the receiver are blessed. And there it is again. It's in giving that we receive. You know, the great religions of the world all teach us about the possibility of receiving from giving. Rumi once said, "What goes out through the door comes back in through the window." The Buddha put it this way, "If you knew as I do the power of giving, you would not let a single meal pass without sharing some of it." Reverend Lynn Unger wrote, "If you look at the Bible, both the Jewish and Christian scriptures, you will find that one verse in eight deals with the relationship between faith and how you use your money and possessions. Of the Ten Commandments, three provide instructions on how you should use your money and possessions. Of the 38 or so parables of Jesus, 16 deal with the relationship of what you say you believe and how you use your money and possessions. In fact, everything that Jesus talks about, of all the things he talks about, the number two topic is, guess what? The use of money and possessions. You know, and as Islam certainly is not bashful in addressing the importance of generosity, one of the five pillars or principal teachings of Islam is called zakat, which is the requirement that every Muslim each year give 2.5% of his or her total assets. Now, that's not annual income. That's 2.5% of total assets of everything you have. Religion guides us in so many ways as to how we should live our lives, but primarily among the teachings is the importance of generosity, and not just to the recipient, but also to us as the giver. One of my recently retired colleagues, Tom Owen Toll, in an article not long ago, put it this way. "The older I get, the more I realize the primary religious quality is generosity, giving liberally of our time, talent, and resources to those communities that bring us abundant life." You know, when I read those words for the first time, they jumped out at me. Yes, I thought, that's exactly the way I feel. That's why even though I give to many fine charitable causes, even though I give directly to many poor people on the street in Mexico, the place where I make my largest contribution is to my church and my faith tradition. For this is a community that brings about abundant life here and beyond. It does so through the support and inspiration we provide each other in good times and in bad. It does so in the works of love and justice we do together. The gifts I give to my church keep on giving because we teach our children to grow a heart filled with generosity so they'll embark on a lifetime of giving and will bring the values of this faith to the world of the future. What we celebrate here today is not raising money. It is making possible those things that bring about abundant life. It's happening everywhere here, in our music program, in our religious education program, in our pastoral shared ministry, in our worship, in our social justice programs, in our support for each other, in the learning we do, the good times we have, even in the private personal actions of many of you that have their roots in the message or teachings of this faith. Over the years, I've had the privilege to come to know a few people with great wealth, usually by serving on boards with them, who really do wonderful things with their money. And in conversation with one of them, she said to me, "I'm a generous person because my church and my family taught me not just that this was expected of me, but that this was what will make my life meaningful." And they were right. I would have been very confused in how to lead my life if I had not been blessed with those teachings at an early age. So on this Stewardship Sunday, it's important that we recognize not just the needs of this church for our time and our talent and our money, but also the importance of cultivating the spiritual practice of generosity in our lives. What our stewardship campaign each year really asks of us is this: to honestly embrace the spiritual practice of generosity. I hope you'll use what you have, your time, your talent, and your treasure, to bless this community, and to do, and in doing so, truly bless yourself. This is the Sunday when we ask you to commit to give generously to the church for next year. Some of you have already made your financial pledge for the coming year. This Sunday is a time when I have the privilege to express to you thanks. Thanks from this entire community. Maybe even thanks from those who will be the future community here, still benefiting from your generosity. I know that the gifts you've given come from your heart. I know they're given in love and even with some sacrifice. And they express a great deal about who you are and what you care about. What we ask of you is a thoughtful gift, one given with a generous heart. For some people, that'll be a lot of money. For others, especially those living on fixed income, it will be much, much smaller. Yes, we need about a 10% increase over last year to do all the important things Rochelle mentioned to you. So for those who are able, I invite you to join me in increasing your pledge for what you'll give next year over this year. But even if you're not able to do that, even if you're not able to contribute any money to this church at all, just know that by your presence here, in your service, and your commitment, and your spiritual support to this institution, you too are good stewards. And know your role, your respect, the services you receive from this church have no relationship to the money you are able to contribute. And know that whatever you do contribute is kept strictly confidential. Most of you probably received a pledge card on your way in this morning. Some of you've also received it in the mail. If you haven't received one and would like one, you can raise your hands and one of our ushers or our stewardship committee will bring them. If you've already made that pledge, thank you. If you've not yet pledged, I really invite you to do so in this service this morning in just a minute when I conclude this sermon. You know, if you really do need more time or you need to talk with someone, that's okay, but it's enormously helpful to our stewardship committee to get as many pledges as possible today. And then they won't have to call you or try to hunt you down or whatever. And if you pledge today, which I hope many of you will, after you fill out the card, put that card in the envelope that's provided and seal it. If you made a pledge already, and maybe you're just so inspired by this morning's service and you want to raise it, go ahead. I guarantee you they'll take the higher amount of the two cards. If you're like some folks who spoke with me, can't remember exactly what you pledged, but you know you want to increase a little, if you write on that card, you know, increase my pledge by X percent, they'll calculate the amount for you. In a few minutes, members of the stewardship committee will go up and down the aisle to collect any sealed envelopes. So if you pledge and you're done with it, just pass it to the end of the row. Now look, I know figuring out how much to give is not easy. I struggle with it every year. For me, there's always this inherent conflict. On one hand, there's the amount that I would truly like to give when I think how important this church is to me and to the community. And when I think about that amount, I'm just not thinking in terms of any of my other expenses. No mortgage, car payments, fuel bills, they're all out of my mind. Then on the other hand, there's that budget-minded me, the one who thinks, well, I'll have to carefully calculate every little expense, and what's left over after I've paid all those other bills, then I'll see what I can contribute. What I want to tell you is that I don't think either of those methods are the way to determine the amount you should give. A generous gift has to push us a bit. It should not be just what's left over after everything else. But neither should it cause us distress and require that other bills go unpaid to fulfill your pledge. I hope that you'll make a pledge that feels good to you because it is truly generous for you. A pledge that tells the truth about who you are, a person with something to give, who has received abundantly and wants to give back, and who's connected to and cares about so many things larger than yourself. You know, the truth is that here we are all givers and all receivers. Sometimes it's more one than the other. Sometimes it's money. Sometimes it's acts of love or kindness. Sometimes it's other things. Of course, we feel blessed when we receive. But like my late cousin Raymond, I think we also know the blessing we experience when we give. The older I get, the more I understand that not only is it better to give than receive, but in fact, it is in giving that we do receive. In this religious community, we receive so much from the generosity of others. And to each other and to the world, we do give. Together, we share. And that's the way we live. Thank you for embracing the spiritual practice of generosity. And for the gifts of your time and talent that you give to this church all the time. Thank you for the many blessings you give to each other and to the world by making a pledge. And even for the blessing you give to yourself when you make a truly generous pledge. What you have done, what you are doing, makes it possible for us to move forward together in service, in love, in community. This is a church that continues to really move forward. And a very few churches can say that. We continue to grow and expand and diversify and reach out more and more with each year, striving to make real the message of this faith within these walls and beyond these walls. In the words of the Zulu song, Siyahamba kukenyen kwenkos, we're marching in the light of God. I'd like to invite you to rise as you're able and join in singing that. It's number 1030 in your hymnal. Mike will do the shout-outs for us as to what we're doing. And then we'll, after we're done singing, we're going to keep the music going, and we'll all just march our way out to coffee hour, okay?